Chuck Poor Show at Up and Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. I see you. I got you a bunch of your text over there. I'm going to get to, I promise, here in at some point here in the next couple of segments. Still to come on today's show, Outcap, Greg Davis. They're still debating down at the Alabama legislature. Until they sighty die, we're not out of the woods here on this gambling stuff. But we'll talk about that with Greg coming up in about an hour from now. Joining us now, it's been a little while, but I'm always glad we can make time, and he makes time for us, I should say, from the 6th Congressional District, a newly drawn 6th Congressional District, might I add, but from the 6th Congressional District, Congressman Gary Palmer. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Well, let's just kick it off here. The weird motion to vacate business not really got tabled with Democrats voting alongside on, I guess, what we will call the Johnson side of this. But what do you make of that turmoil? Are we going to see more of this, you think? What should we expect?
Well, occasionally Democrats get things right. You know, the old saying that even a blind squirrel can find a nut every once in a while. But I hope it puts to rest all the turmoil. Mike Johnson is in a very precarious situation. And I know it drives your listeners crazy when we can't tell you stuff that we learn in classified settings, but there's a reason for that. But Mike has access to information that guides him in his decision making, and Mike and Speaker Johnson and the rest of us are doing all that we can to try to keep the car out of the ditch until we can get to the election and get Trump elected, get the Senate back and hold the House and try to keep us out of World War III.
Yeah, well, it really is that bumpy out there. I think putting that aside, heading into this election cycle, I mean, well, let me just ask you this. What do you think, Trump versus Biden and then down ticket House and Senate? I mean, do you feel good about where Republicans are today?
Well, despite all the crazy stuff that's going on, the dynamics haven't changed and will not change. The average price of gas nationwide is $3.59. It was two something when Trump was at the end of the Trump administration. Food prices are up over 20%. Energy costs, just like your household utilities, are up over 29%. And people are struggling. And then the border's wide open, and God only knows who's gotten in here that we weren't able to interdict. And that's the kind of stuff that keeps me awake at night. I think I talked to some women, Jeff, that have daughters in college, and they don't want their daughters to go out jogging. They're worried about them going out at night because they're afraid something will happen to them like happened to Lincoln Riley or Ruby Garcia. And one of the things that I pointed out, and I handed out, I chair the policy committee, so we put out these little pocket cards for our members to have information that they can use. And we looked at just the Border Patrol's convictions, not arrests, not investigations, just convictions of non-citizens for murder or manslaughter. In the 4 years Trump was in office, it was 11, just 11. In the 3 years and four, 2 or 3 months that Biden's been in office, it's 169. Non-citizen murders or homicides, manslaughter, convictions. That doesn't include the guy that killed Lincoln Riley or the guy that killed Ruby Garcia because they haven't been convicted. And it's just amazing what Biden has done in the time that he's been in office in terms of wrecking our economy, breaking people's savings because they can't afford their groceries, can't afford their household utilities, can't afford their health care. So I don't think the dynamics are going to change in the next 6 months. And that's why they're trying they're doing this, what is unprecedented in U.S. history, trying to imprison a political opponent. It's unbelievable.
Congressman, something you draw attention to, I don't know if you say, maybe you said on this program or maybe you said it somewhere else, I heard it, but I think it's an important point to reiterate. This what we're seeing at the border and the way this migration is occurring, you know, it's not necessarily staying in Texas right there at the border, but you're seeing a lot of these migrants, illegal immigrants, go to some of these Rust Belt states or some of these states that are losing population. And I think you're correct in saying that this is a way for these blue states to maintain or even perhaps increase their representation in Congress because the census counts people, not citizens.
That's right. And if it weren't for all the illegals living in California, instead of losing just one seat in the House, they would have lost probably two, three, maybe even four more if we didn't count those people. I went back, and Jeff, you know how I am. I'm a complete nerd. I research stuff all the time. And I went back and looked at how transitory these people are. How long do they actually live in California before they go somewhere else? And it's like a little over 7 years. So that means in 2020, when we did the census, those people that got counted probably won't be there by 2030. And they'll be replaced by these people that they've led across the borders. And the same thing's true in New York and Illinois and Michigan, Pennsylvania. They're losing population because people are fed up. They're getting out as quick as they can, and the only way they can maintain their power in the House is to bring people in there who are here illegally and count them. We actually are moving legislation that will die in the Senate, and we know that, but we're putting ourselves on record that we want to change how we count people. We'll count them for government funding purposes, but we're not going to count them for representational purposes.
Joined by Congressman Gary Palmer here on the program. Congressman, listen, you and I were talking about something off air, and this is kind of fascinating to me. The crossover, and this all National Public Radio, and you know, the traditional argument against NPR is that they are subsidized by the taxpayer, and do our tax dollars really need to subsidize something like that? But a real important point you make here is, well, okay, let's look at the political bias here and the what's led to that. But you point out this. There's some crossover between what we're seeing with these protests on these campuses, some cases anti-Semitism, just very anti-Israel in general, versus the same people are given to those are given to NPR, believe it or not.
Yes, they are. And I think we shouldn't be sending tax dollars to a left-wing propaganda news organization like they that operates on your National Public Radio. So I don't, but the federal dollars is just part of it. And it draws our attention away from something that I think is critically important. And that's to look at these multi-billion dollar foundations that are the real money behind National Public Radio, like the MacArthur Foundation and groups like that. And look at the other things that they fund. Some of the same foundations that are the big money behind NPR are funding these campus protesters, paying these people who trained them to protest, buying the tents and stuff. And then you look a little bit farther, and they're also the dark money supporting Democratic candidates, or actually some of the principals, like certain family members of these foundations are giving money directly to the Democratic candidates. I just think the American people need to wake up to what's really going on here. And then the other thing is, in the hearing yesterday, they made the argument that the American public's not well served by local radio. And one of the arguments they made was, and your listeners, I think, will bear this out, that when it's a weather situation, they need National Public Radio to keep them informed. Well, how many of the listeners to your program in Mobile are turning into NPR instead of turning into your station?
Our station or our weather radio, perhaps, but TV, internet. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just like that's not really a good justification.
Now, can you imagine someone with an NPR voice telling you you need to take shelter because, no, that ain't happening. And that foundation that I mentioned earlier, the MacArthur Foundation, has invested $500 million to try to infiltrate in local communities with left-wing radio.
I mean, and the political bias, it's not just, Congressman, it's not just like federal politics. I mean, it's in state and local politics as well that they really go, it's really more disturbing when you see how just far out of the mainstream they are on the local politics. It's startling, but that you're right. I mean, it's these left-wing foundations, I think, that are really steering the editorial there.
Well, George Soros is behind the Tides and Arabella, which is Arabella basically is a conglomeration of different groups funding. But he's also the guy behind all these left-wing district attorneys who refuse to prosecute people who are destroying property on college campuses in opposition to Israel and fostering all this anti-Semitism.
Do you ever think we get to the point where you will see the separation where finally government will stop propping up some of these public broadcasting? They're not just NPR, but PBS as well.
Well, I would like to see if we could, and that would start with getting Donald Trump reelected, getting a majority in the Senate, and expanding a majority in the House, and everybody that's for that get on board.
I mean, it's just we've been talking about how long have we been talking about this issue, though, and just how wrong it is. I mean, you go back to like what was it when James O'Keefe had surreptitiously taped the NPR executive, and they were clearly like politically slanted, and we talk about it, and no one will acknowledge this. It's a much different world now. And maybe we don't need all this government subsidy going into that. And like for a guy like me that's in this racket of radio, it's like, you know, this is what I got to compete with, right?
Well, and I know how hard you have to work to keep the program on the air that people may think, well, Jeff just works 2 or 3 hours a day, but you're working 8 to 10 hours a day selling advertising. You have to have a product that people are willing to buy or buy into, and NPR just sits back and gets all this foundation money, and then they get subsidized a little more from the federal government. And what brought this about was this new CEO of NPR made it clear that they would not hire any conservatives or Republicans. There are zero conservatives or Republicans that work at NPR.
I mean, just even if you question the political bias or the need or any of that, the fact that they would engage in that discriminatory behavior, I mean, it number one, I mean, it shouldn't, they you should never, ever do that and make a statement like that. But number two, I mean, that to me is grounds enough to take away forget about the need or whatever justifies it. There ought to be repercussions for engaging in that sort of discriminatory behavior.
Yeah, it's a propaganda machine, and it's extremely dangerous. We have to have unbiased media, and that's true for everybody. When we need to just give the facts, and too much of this is opinion, but what NPR has done, it's beyond opinion. It's deliberate distortion of the news to lead people to a conclusion that fits their agenda. It is pure propaganda.
But when you say you're implementing a policy, that is going to discriminate against a person, be it their political, religious, ethnicity, whatever it may be. I mean, that to me is way, way more problematic, and it ought to, at a minimum, exclude you from any kind of consideration for public money.
Well, I agree. And there's another example that's really an old example. It's over 30 years old. And a lot of your listeners probably weren't born when this happened. But do you remember a major reporter on National Public Radio named Nina Totenberg?
Oh, yeah, Supreme Court reporter.
Yeah. Well, her husband gave her information that was not for public release about Clarence Thomas, and that's where the whole Anita Hill thing started. She deliberately released information that was inappropriate to try to blow up his confirmation. And I think she did it primarily because they couldn't stomach the idea of a black conservative on the Supreme Court.
Your tax dollars at work. Congressman, you're always very gracious with your time. We do appreciate it. Let's talk again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Jeff.
Thank you. Gary Palmer from the 6th Congressional District. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain.